for the show to be over.
Already?
Yeah.
All right.
Mike doesn't like talking to me.
Shut up.
Well, as evidenced by the fact that you haven't been on since 2013.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah. That's all Mike's fault, too.
Really?
I believe it.
I brought it up, and he's just like, I don't know. That McKeever guy. Yeah. So, hey, welcome to week 671 of the Crankcast. I'm Crank.
Woo!
Mike's there, and Sean McKeever's with us for the first time in 5 years.
I'm 5 years older and 5 years less wise.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Is that possible? Are you getting dementia?
I don't know about getting.
I guess, okay, since it's been so long and there may be people listening now that didn't listen then, do you think we picked up new people? I don't know.
Oh,
yeah. Hey, and there's future Sean, or past Sean. Or
hi, Sean.
Hello.
Other Sean. Sean Dove.
I'm the future's past.
First off, I had a request for us to just completely refer to you as the Keeve.
What?
Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah.
Who said that?
Lyle? Lyle Coleman? Kodiak? Iron Kodiak?
The guy you did the cover for?
Oh, that guy, yeah.
If I remember...
Don't do that.
Okay. We won't do that. The Keeve. It sounds like a British show, though. Some sort of, British cop show.
A British cop show. Yeah. I can play a British cop.
So you...
Without the British accent.
So you'd be sort of a reverse no-American. For anybody that doesn't know who we're talking to, just a brief recap of the history of Sean McKeever. He was born, and then...
Then he died.
Then he died. Then he started working in comics and died again.
Boy, did
yeah. I used to make the comic books 10 million years ago.
So he's known for such things as The Waiting Place, which Mike also worked on. And that was your first working together, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Groovy. Sean also did Spider-Man Loves Mary Jane. And Inhumans. He did some Inhumans, I remember.
Yep. Teen Titans. I did a book called Marvel Adventures Spider-Man with this awful artist, Mike Norton. I co-created Gravity with Mike Norton.
Yeah.
And I did Fear Itself, Youth in Revolt with Mike Norton.
And then he left comics.
And then comics left me. And I went to work in video games for a while and worked on Star Wars The Old Republic, and now I'm freelance again, and I'm writing video games freelance, and I got a new comic book out called Apo Zero. Yay!
Yay! Issue 2's in stores as of last week, I believe.
Correct.
So, I don't know, where you want to begin? You want to talk about that a little bit? Outpost?
I mean, I guess. I can talk about that.
It's up to you. I don't care. We can talk about
that. I'm not on here for, a promotional thing, so, I mean...
Waiting place on another planet.
That was actually the original... Well, not the original germ of it, but, when I started actually forming it as a series...
You gotta be kidding me.
What is that?
It's a car alarm.
When I started designing the series, what I really wanted to do was to do The Waiting Place, but with science fiction. And it's kind of that, but kind of not. It's a little more of a straightforward book than it is slice of life. But there's a lot of that slice of life kind of stuff. The key difference between The Waiting Place and Outpost Zero, though, is...
All the snow's made out of methane?
The Waiting Place was, kids who wanted to, get the hell out of town. They wanted to leave their little tourist trap town, and it felt like a purgatory to them. Whereas this is they're trapped on a biome from a generation ship that crashed on the wrong planet, and they're on this ice planet, and they can't escape to anywhere. They're just stuck with 10,000 other people inside this biome that could break any time and kill them all.
Ah, so Waiting Place, but with deadly consequences.
Yeah. It's,
yes.
Now they have a reason to feel so miserable.
It's actually a pretty optimistic book, I'll say. I know Mike likes to give me a hard time for my characters being so depressed, but...
Well, they're depressed because you make them miserable.
Because I base them on me.
You never give them any happiness.
That's not true. There was a smile in one issue of The Waiting Place. I remember it.
Yeah. Smiles all over the place in that book. Weirdly, I'm reading a book that's not similar to that, but it does involve a generation ship and biomes and heading to a foreign planet and whatnot. It was Kim Stanley Robinson book from like last year or the year before, I think.
Oh.
But I'm just to the point where they're getting to a planet, so I don't know if it's going to wind up to be Outpost Zero or not. It's just a weird, I bring it up just because it's weird timing. You know.
Yeah.
Well, that's cool. So who are you working with on that book?
The artist on that is a guy named Alexander Tefenki, and he's a Belgian artist who's, you know, he's mostly done work in Europe. And he lives out in Vietnam now. He and his family just moved out to Vietnam last year.
Wow.
Yeah, which was kind of cool. But he was discovered by Cliff Chang.
Really?
And Cliff suggested him to Robert Kirkman. And then, you know, we wound up, like, we were looking for an artist, for the right artist for this book for, like, over a year.
Long time.
And, yeah, and I saw Alex's samples, and I said, oh, hell yeah, like, that's the guy. And they were obviously cool with him, too. I think Robert and I generally just have, different tastes in artists. There were a lot of people I really wanted to work with who do more of like the slice of life kind of stuff, and I think he wanted something a little more more along the traditional path, and Alex is great in that regard. He's fantastic with layouts and storytelling. So I'm actually just really happy with you know how our team shaped up, and we've got Jean-Francois Bolu on colors, and he's really dynamite.
Is that how you say his name? I always wondered how to say his last name.
I cheated and went to some site that like pronounced it, and so that's what I'm going with until like I meet him or hear from him and he says no, you're completely wrong.
Okay.
And Ariana Marr is our letterer, and she's doing some really cool stuff. Like there's an issue coming up that has a lot of music in it, and she did some really cool stuff with that, with the lyrics.
Oh, I want to look at that. I always have trouble with that because to me it's music. Music notated in comics just never looks right, and I struggle with it still.
I liked the way that we experimented with it in The Waiting Place, not with Mike so much. That was with the Frame Brothers in the first volume.
Yeah.
And we would kind of make it part of the artwork in a way for a couple of the segments, and that was kind of a neat way to do it. But for this, Ariana found a way to do it with balloons that works really well, I think. And an issue... it's an issue 3. You know, she does a thing where, like, there's a character singing to a song, and so she kind of overlays the person singing over the lyric balloons, and it looks really cool. I'm kind of obsessed now with the idea of writing lyrics for songs that don't exist in my comics.
They were pre-existing songs, because people get touchy about that, don't they?
Yeah, and in fact, I'm still kind of, like, waiting for the day that, like, you know, I hear from Trent Reznor's lawyers that we can't have those lyrics to Something I Can Never Have in The Waiting Place or something like that, you know?
Right.
I think you can use a certain amount of it, and it's fair use, but I don't really know. I'm not a lawyer, you know. But I'm having much more fun writing lyrics to songs. Like, I have something I'd like to do someday, which involves, like, writing lyrics for songs that don't exist and having artists, like, basically illustrate it and turn it into a music video.
You should just have Crank just make the music.
Sean can make music.
Yeah, he can.
Not really. I can remix.
I just want to touch back on Ariana again, because like, I've seen some of her other work, and she does some interesting things with how she handles representing conceptual balloons, I guess, would be the way to say it. You know.
Like stuff that's not just the standard kind of balloons.
Yeah, it's stuff that kind of wants to interact a little more with coloring and what's going on with the art and whatnot.
Right.
She's,
do you do much of that, or are you pretty much meat and potatoes kind of lettering?
I tend to be real minimalist. Yeah. I get out of the way. Sometimes I'll do stuff if it calls for it. Although sometimes I do it, and then, you know, once it gets to post-press, they yell at me. Or not post-press, pre-press, you know.
It doesn't work out.
Well, they, you know, I'll do something, and they'll be like, can you knock this down from three colors to two? And I'm like, I can't make this color with two. You know, like, stuff like that, you know. But, I mean,
right.
Yeah, occasionally I will. I tend to – a lot of the people I work with are very – there's a lot going on in the art, so I try to stay out of the way of it.
Sure.
But,
makes
sense. Yeah, you know, I mean, I'd like to experiment more. Just, you know, I don't very much lately.
I mean, I guess they, you know – I guess people maybe kind of think of lettering as an invisible art, like the kind of thing, like, it's really good if you don't think about it at all. But I really like looking at what letterers are doing and the different ways that they approach it.
Yeah, I mean, there's, you know, there's different schools of thought. There's that traditionalist that does say it should get out of the way completely. Like, you just shouldn't even know it's there. And then, you know, there's other people that are like, well, fuck that. You know, what's the point of it being an additional piece of art if it's not there, like, kind of thing, you know?
Right. Like, I was a bigger fan of when, you know, for six issues, Mike did computer lettering on The Waiting Place. And then for the last six issues, he hand lettered. And I really like the hand lettering. And I like when artists hand letter their own stuff. Like, I always think of Jonan Vasquez, you know, like the way that he made the lettering part of the art.
Yeah, yeah. And it... Yeah, it gives. I mean, just the variation alone in it gives it more, like more of an organic
personality.
Yeah, more personality, yeah. More of an organic feel. It integrates better with the art, you know. Like, I mean, you know, computer lettering, it's done for convenience sake, really. You know, I mean, you can do like vary. I'm getting kind of tumbled over my tongue here. I mean, you can give it personality. You can make it vary. You can do stuff like that. But, I mean, bottom line is it's there so that it's easily edited later.
You know? Yeah. Yeah.
That reminds me. I got to give you some notes.
Oh, okay. Sure. But, yeah. Anyway, so, yeah, I was just saying that I like Ariana's work.
Yeah, I've been really happy with everybody I'm working with on the book. So, except for myself, of course.
How could you be happy with yourself, Sean? Really?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
So what got you back into, like, why this project? How'd this get you back into comics?
It was really that I was approached by Skybound. When was that? Like 2013, actually. So it wasn't, like, I got out of comics in 2011. I went to Bioware in 2012. And then, you know, just over a year later, Sean Makowitz, who's an editor at he's like the top editor, I guess, I don't know his exact title, I hope it's not top editor, at Skybound, and he, you know, he just said, you know, I hadn't seen you doing anything, and, you know, we'd like to, you know, try something out with you, and so I sent him my first pitch, which, I wish I could remember the exact wording, but basically the decision was that it was too dark.
Oh,
so,
it was Waiting Place in a blackout.
it was Waiting Place as as Halloween 2.
Okay.
Or maybe Halloween 4 would be more accurate.
Oh, I remember that. I remember that story. That was a good story, though.
Yeah, I may still do that someday. I'd like to find some place to do it. I also talked to Vertigo briefly about doing it before Shelley Bond left. In fact, at the same time I had, in 2013, I had Vertigo and Skybound, you know, having me pitch them to do stuff. But I only had room to do one book because that's, you know, that was the rule at EA was that, you know, they'll let you do a side project, but just kind of the one thing. And so I had, you know, I had to pick one or the other, but Skybound was the first one to say yes to something. So I wound up doing that instead of possibly doing the other one at Vertigo. We were still talking about like two different pitches at Vertigo. It hadn't quite coalesced. So I started working on that in 2014, and then in 2015 I decided to go freelance again, and you know now it's finally out, 5 years after we started talking.
Yeah, I can't believe it.
So, yeah, for anybody that thinks comics is a fast-moving business, it can be, but...
it mostly is. Skybound is, like, is one of those exceptions, you know, from what I understand. Like anytime you read an interview with somebody there, you know, they've got so much of it already done. Like, I think Oblivion Song, when that was launched, they had 10 issues done. And they sent out, like a mock of the first trade to retailers, you know, like they were ready to go and to let retailers know they were in it for the long haul, you know. And with Outpost Zero, I haven't worked on it in over a year, outside of, like, editing and, you know, overseeing art and stuff like that. I haven't worked on a script in over a year, and I'm, you know, I've got 14 issues in the can, so we're doing okay, yeah.
Yeah, I've done work with a couple of publishers that work really far ahead before they even release the first issue, and to me that makes, you know, I mean, that means you have to, like, commit from a financial standpoint from the publisher.
Right,
and, but, yeah. I mean, it makes a little more sense because, you know, you've got it there. You don't have to worry about your monthly, like, somebody screwing up. You know?
Right. You give yourself some padding, and you also give yourself some time, I think, to reflect on what you're doing. And in this market where you're making trade paperbacks and this stuff is meant to be in print for potentially decades, you know, the kind of the Marvel DC, like, hey, we want you to work on this book. Oh, okay. We've got an artist for it, and the solicitation is actually coming out tomorrow, so we're going to put your name on there.
Right. Yeah. Right.
You know, I've had stuff like that happen where, you know, like on Teen Titans, where they came to me and they said, hey, we want you to take over Teen Titans with issue 50. I'm like, oh, cool. It's a double-sized issue, and this is, you know, this is how many pages it is, and this is what the story is going to be. You know, and that was kind of, you know, you wind up starting behind schedule, and you never quite catch up, and you don't have the time that you need to really sit and think about the long-term plans.
Yeah, and I suppose working in larger chunks like that, full arcs, more or less, right? I mean, you kind of get a better sense of, because like you said, I mean, so much of this stuff is really intended for trade. It's getting printed monthly for expense reasons or whatever. So, you know, I think you probably get a better sense of actually how it works as a whole piece instead of writing the ending, you know, after six issues have already been coming out, kind of thing.
And getting yourself, like, stuck or finding that there were ways that you could seed the ending, things like that. But, you know, I do also, like, you know, the trade paperbacks are the kind of the gravy now, and the monthlies sort of pay the bills, right?
I think that's a thought now, yeah.
But really, like, when I'm writing a monthly comic, I really do try to think of the chapters as their own things that you shouldn't feel like you just read a comic and nothing happened and it was all middle, you know. So I, you know, I still try to do that, and I think that's good for the trade paperback as well, because it makes it more digestible that way and keeps it fresh and interesting to, you know, maybe switch up perspectives or focus on one aspect in the, you know, in one chapter of the book.
And I'm sure it's a tough balance to strike because, I mean, yeah, monthly, I mean, if you're putting out something in a monthly book, it should give you something each month, you know? It shouldn't just be a space in between other things, right? I mean, like you're just saying, like, but it's, I think it's tough to strike that balance and still create a whole work that is meant to be read in a longer form, right?
So. Yeah, and it's harder now with 20 pages versus 22 or 24, you know, I mean, that's a, you know, when the industry dropped from 22 to 20, I mean, you lose 10% of your workspace, you know, yeah. And if you...
You're not doing, you know, that on Outpost, though.
We're 20 pages an issue.
You are?
Yeah, the first issue was, it was technically, we took the first two scripts and I merged them and we kind of... fixed them up so it doesn't have a, like, a clear midpoint, but yeah, that was issues 1 and 2, and that was like 42 pages, I think, and then every issue after that is, well, almost every issue is 20 pages. We do have one 22 pager coming up, the start of the second arc.
And that was dictated to you to do that?
I mean that's how they do it.
Okay.
Yeah, that's, I mean, like, it is work for hire, so.
You're writing 24 to 30 page stories for me.
Right.
You jerk.
Well, the thing with undeads, though, is it really is even more so than anything else I've worked on in some time, meant to be like digestible.
Yeah, they're
a single issue. Even though there is an ongoing sort of thread.
Yeah, they're one and done sort of things.
Yeah, so you need that extra space, I think, to set up, especially like when you're doing a mystery and you know all that. I think that you wind up needing that real estate, and also, you know, I think we're in an age where a lot of comics seem to be done like in 3 and 4 panel sequences, you know, per page, and that really kind of kills that, you know, story momentum as well to me. I look at like, you know, Marvel and DC books that do that, and I kind of marvel at how much information they're able to get into those kind of formats. But I'm not a huge fan of it. I think the panel variance is good for pacing, and it's, you know, and it's good for storytelling and a lot of reasons. You know, I don't think everything needs to look widescreen.
We were sort of talking about this last week, Mike.
Well, we were talking about artists that don't tell stories.
Well, yeah, we were more along the lines of like splash pages with kind of some prose with them or whatever, I guess.
I was kind of talking about how I was surprised that there are so many artists now, and it's not even like the image style where people are like, oh, everything's a splash page. It's like beauty shots now. There are a lot of artists that are coming from Tumblr and stuff that just draw basically fashion shots, and they're getting work now, and I'm like, wow, storytelling isn't as important as it used to be.
Right, and I think that kind of stuff can take longer too, and that's part of that issue that's been cropping up with more and more artists being, you know, 6 week artists on monthly books.
Oh, 6 weeks on 20 pages. That's, you know, this just occurred to me. Since the move to 20 pages being more or less a standard with like Marvel and DC, I guess, does that mean the trades are smaller too, or do they just put 12 issues in where they would put 10 issues before or something? Like,
no, they're just smaller.
Huh.
Yeah, I mean, like our trades are going to be 5 issues each, you know. So I mean, that's still a good chunk, 120 pages.
Yeah. Well. Yeah. 100 pages, right? Well, 20, I guess, with filler.
Oh yeah, 100 pages. My math is great.
That's fine. You're not a, you know, scientist.
Mathematician.
He is, though.
He is?
Batman's a scientist.
Oh.
Sean.
Sorry, that's my favorite. That's my favorite Simpsons line.
Sean does math for fun.
Not really. I do like coding and stuff for fun.
Do you still do coding for fun?
I haven't in a long time, no. I really would like to, because I'd like to start making games again, but I just don't have the time. There's this video game I'm working on right now that's got me just like incredibly busy, because I'm the only writer on it, and it's a narrative-based game, and it's pretty exciting, and I love the work, but it's just too much of it.
Right on. Again, for anybody that doesn't remember who Sean is, Sean used to code a lot of stuff, but he made a video game. Wasn't really a video game, it was a computer game. Back in the an interactive game back in the aughts about what was it, comic book stocks? No, comic book.
It was called Comic Book Mogul, and Mike liked to call it How to Fail at Comics Publishing.
That's a depressing game.
I needed to set the parameters differently, because everybody, like, it was impossible to make money as a comic book publisher.
Never win the game.
It was actually Sean's secret attempt at demoralizing anybody trying to get into comics.
Yeah. I actually have plans for a 2.0, but I mean, it would have to almost be like a Kickstarter or a funded thing, like, because the amount of time it would take me to actually write that code and test it and everything, we're talking a few months of my life, you know, and I don't know that I would have, you know, that I would be able to afford to just take 3 months off to do that.
I remember loving the names of the artists and the writers.
Oh yeah, I had I just basically took down 3 databases. I took a database of male first names, a database of female first names, and a database of last names. And I took out some of them. And then it would just randomly pair names.
Yeah, they just sounded so weird sometimes.
Yeah, yeah.
Huh. Like,
but but my 2.0 thing would be a lot of fun. I've like incorporated ideas from other games that I really liked that are no longer around. Like, there was a game called The Movies that was.
Oh yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, it was like a. It's almost like a real-time strategy game in a way, because you're like managing this movie studio lot.
You actually made the movies in those too, though, right?
Yeah, yeah. So it was everything from building the lot to hiring stars to making them better, and actually, like, if you wanted to, you could actually go in and direct the movies yourself and set up the shots and everything like that, which would, to me was like super tedious. But it was also a really cool engine. I'm surprised the game didn't take off as a bigger deal, but. But it was a really fun game to play, and so there were certain aspects of like how you make you know, talent better, and how the sort of star system for their qualities and stuff. Mm-hmm. And then you know, I sort of took the idea of like writers and artists, like what makes certain kinds of writers and certain kind of artists good for superheroes or for crime or this and that. And so I created. So, like, I have, like, five different qualities, you know, for a writer and five different qualities for an artist, and would give them different ratings, like, which are they good at, which are they bad at, and then, you know, you kind of have to intuit, like, well, which one would be good to hire for this comic, you know, and that kind of stuff, but, you know, it's all, like, pages of notes and text files that, you know, maybe someday I'll get around to it, but I would almost have to be semi-retired to really do it.
Yeah, that's a lot of time for one person. I mean, because, you know, you got to figure most of that stuff's done by teams, you know, where they can split up the
right.
work. And everybody's got, like, a specialty or whatever, so they're faster at it.
Right, and it's the kind of thing where, like, at some point I would want to bring in, like, an artist to, you know, to, like, create characters and stuff like that. But you know, it's on my dream list for someday.
Right on. For McKeever leisure time.
Yeah, of course, some kid will probably make one of those in a day or something, or there'll be an engine to build a game like that in a day in the future.
It might already be. I mean, it's been a long time. They, you know, they churn out those apps for, well, both major phone operating systems, but like even like Facebook and stuff like that. It's so fast now, you know.
Right. Yeah. Speaking of technology, I read this interesting article today that. So Microsoft and Amazon are making it so Alexa and Cortana are integrated with each other.
Oh, God, they're going to make friends.
And, well, the best part is the way that you do it. So, like, if you're at your computer and you want to connect up with, I can't say her name too loud because I got three of them in my house.
What?
I got three of them.
That's overboard, right?
No. I got one in my bedroom, one in my living room, and one in the bathroom.
Just call it Al.
And what's fun is, like, when I have friends over and they go to the bathroom, we call the bathroom one because we're 12.
Right, that's what you do. I mean,
yeah. But no, when I get up in the morning, I tell it to, you know, play NPR everywhere, and when I walk through the house, it's all synced up, and it's, you know, I can play music throughout the whole place when I'm walking around, and it doesn't disappear on me, you know? I like it. But so the way that you do it is like I'm at my computer, and if I want to integrate with Alexa, you would say, Cortana, open Alexa.
Oh, now your Windows 10 is gonna...
And I feel like that should come with like Alexa or Cortana like letting out a blood curdling scream because they're being opened. It's just such a weird thing to say.
So imagine a future where you've got multiple AIs handling different functions in your house and. They decide to get into an argument over something. You know?
Yeah, that was actually I was gonna do a story like that for a game I was working on, where you had like two competing AIs, assistant AIs that were like at war with each other, like across the world, and you know, like that would be a lot of fun.
Yeah, because everybody else is just sort of like, I just want my coffee, you know, like
yeah,
I just want to hear NPR, and then you know, like they get into a fight over who's gonna turn on NPR or whatever, like.
I think if you got like, you could have Owen Wilson as one of the voices, and Ray Liotta. Let's do that. or maybe it's a guy and a girl, and there's like they like
he's they, so they have a love out by my, he's so stressed out by my AI. Why did he make him sound like Ray Liotta?
I feel like he's gonna murder me.
waiting for it to snap.
It's like being born with the wrong name. Like, you're just kind of predestined. So, technology. It's a wonder.
I've heard of it. Computers are the future.
Yeah, I think probably they are a good investment.
Yeah.
I don't know. I remember the pre-computer days kind of fondly now. It seemed less stressful.
You know when I think about the pre-computer days the most?
What's that?
When I'm fucking writing, and it's like everybody's got a computer in their pocket now,
yeah.
And everybody texts each other, and I'm like, but I don't want to write that. You know, like now when you see horror movies, they always have to do the like, oh, there's no signal in this house kind of shit, you know?
Right. They have to work around the fact that everybody can actually contact help. Like,
yeah. Or like there's, you know, like you watch The Flash, which is weird in and of itself that like everybody goes to everybody's workplace there.
Yeah, yeah.
It's so bizarre. It's like, oh, I'm just going to drop by the police station and talk to Barry. No, you're not going to do that. But it's like, it's even worse now. When you watch TV shows and you're like, why didn't they just text? You know, but it's just one of those things that you have to kind of get around, or, you know, sometimes they embrace it and they make it part of the, you know, the graphical overlay of the, and part of the movie or the TV show, you know?
Yeah. So I wonder, well, never mind. But yeah, that is one of those things where technology just, it changes how you have to approach your storytelling a little bit.
Yeah.
I guess that was, you know, I mean, I'm trying to think of so we've got so many more people making so many more stories now. I'm trying to, like, compare this to something in the past. But, like, you know, you go back to, like, say, pre-telephone, post-telephone period, and there just weren't as many published writers, you know? So it's, like, kind of hard to say, like, how much they had to deal with technology, like, having a phone where, like, before that they'd write, like, somebody getting, I don't know, stuck across town and not being able to get a message to somebody, you know, or something.
Right, or having to send a telegram or, you know.
Yeah, where, you know, like, then, say, in the next decade or something, they had to deal with the fact that, well, we can't use that as a plot device anymore. Like,
yeah.
I guess that would fall probably more under, like, pulp writers and the chapbook people back then that were able to get stuff out really fast, you know.
But you would figure, like, now you've got a generation of people just coming out of high school who are aspiring writers who, like, their whole lives have been with those devices, you know? And so I think they're going to come up with the ways to tell stories visually and in prose. Well, in prose it's easier, but, you know, ways to come up with plots and tell stories that integrate that into the people's lives a lot better than, rather, you know, old men like me.
Rather than just ignoring them or finding ways around them, right?
Like, right, right.
I read an article the other day, and it struck me as funny because it was talking about the what the hell are they calling them now? This new not the millennials, but the post-millennials. They've already got they've got a name for them now.
Yeah, I saw it once. I don't think it's Generation Z.
No, it was like Generation Nothing or something like that. Like,
oh, that's nice.
They were calling it was something. It was something that just sounded kind of like, well, that's kind of super depressing sounding, you know. But and that may not even be the actual common name for them. I may have just been with the article I was reading, but it struck me that, all right, so, you know, I mean, because there's still all these articles coming out about how the millennials are ruining some sort of business or another, or about how the millennials don't need us or whatever, you know, like it's something generally negatively toned articles about millennials. And I'm like, so with this new generation hitting, because this new generation's hitting the college and post-college state, but because the article I was reading was talking about how colleges had to, they're having to adapt with the new generation because of the integration with technology in it. And I'm like, so when are the millennials going to start bitching about the next generation? You know, are we going to start seeing all these articles that are like anti-whatever this new generation's called?
The most I've seen is like there are a lot of articles about millennials that are really about people younger than millennials, and the millennials are complaining that it's like, it's not about us.
Right.
So the war is starting.
So it's like, are they finally going to, like, this is just, it's novel to me because I haven't been through this kind of, like, generational where I can observe the differences between the attitudes of each generation, right? Because I didn't pay any attention to that crap when I was a kid, or even like in my early 20s, you know.
Well, you didn't have the concept of it really. You need to age for that. Yeah.
And plus, I mean, we're at a point now where, you know, I can look at these articles on my phone or on the internet, and I didn't have that in my early 20s either, you know.
Sure.
The internet in my early 20s was, you know, logging on to college's slip account and reading a bunch of green text on black backgrounds. So, but yeah, so it's like, I haven't been able to observe this before, and I think it's kind of, it's like a crazy sort of, you see where this whole, like, you know, parents hate their kids' music kind of thing, but it's still all rock and roll kind of stuff, you know, like, it's not really that different, but it's different enough that everybody's got to try and make their mark. And, yeah, I mean, circumstances do change and stuff like that. I mean, the people that were born, that were kids, like, in 2008, you know, they were still kids when the American economy went into a giant recession and crapped out.
Yeah.
You know, we didn't have to deal with that when we were, you know, 8 or 9 years old kind of thing, you know?
Right.
So it's, I mean, yeah, stuff, circumstances change, but it's just weird how much of it seems so attitudinal rather than physical.
Yeah, I mean, it really is kind of the same from generation to generation. You find yourself becoming your parents, you know, in the sense that you look at the younger generations and might find yourself saying, well, when I was younger,
that's not how we did it.
Yeah. It's like, I didn't have a supercomputer in my pocket to go look everything up.
Yeah.
I had to go to the library and I had to know the Dewey fucking decimal system.
And it was uphill both ways. Ah, the Dewey decimal system. They still use it too, though.
Yeah.
Librarians are hardcore, man. They stick to it. Yeah.
Oh yeah, well, if it works, right?
Sure. It's just one of those things that's kind of just neat to watch, I guess. It's when you can get past all the noise, all the feather ruffling and posturing about who's actually in the right or whatever.
Yeah,
it's an interesting change to watch, I think. Sorry,
yeah, I think so.
Sort of went off on a tangent there.
On this show, I can't believe it.
Yeah. Hey, we're usually so very organized and note taking and stuff. What else is new?
No, I mean, how about that TV? The television has a lot of programs on it now.
I wouldn't know. I've stopped pretty much watching like current television.
What? I think you were my source.
I had a thing about a year and a half ago, I guess, and then that caused me to just stop watching new stuff. I mean, I watch a lot of old stuff still, but I'm kind of slowly, like, I'm waiting for new stuff to all get done with so I can catch up on it later in chunks, I guess.
Are you watching, like, F Troop?
Yeah. No, I'm actually watching the animated version of F Troop with the Gophers. I don't remember what the name of that cartoon was.
Oh, that was a real thing?
Yeah.
That's the thing with them, is he'll tell you that, and you're like, are you serious?
It was called, like, Goofy Gophers or something. It was one of the.
I have no idea.
It was animated like the you know, the boy and the dog and stuff like that, like the Fractured Fairy Tales. It was sort of animated like that kind of style.
You're still talking another language. Sorry, I don't know the Fractured Fairy Tales.
And these are all cartoons that like predate us. I mean,
mm-hmm.
But they were on a lot when I was a kid, which is how why I know them. They would run them on like just afternoon blocks when they were trying to fill up stuff or whatever. Or
yeah,
weekend.
Back when they used to do that, yeah.
Yeah, now they just fill up stuff with advertisements or something instead.
Or new stuff, yeah. I mean, there's so much scripted material now. I think there's actually like, yeah, they talk about the golden age of television, and I agree to a point because the material's very good at the top, but there's just so much middle. You know, I saw somebody complaining on Twitter the other day, like, oh, season one of this show was okay, but season two is so bad, I can't believe it. I'm like, why are you watching it? There's so much TV now. Like,
yeah.
You know, we used to have to tolerate shitty TV because there was nothing else.
I'm real surprised when I watch that Joel McHale show, and he'll put a clip of some show that I've never heard of, and I was like, I can't believe this exists now. You know?
So going back again to the, you know, what we were talking about with the introduction of computers and having all this technology and things. Part of that, and this goes with comics and movies and music and everything else, is that we've now, at this point, amassed so much permanently recorded stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Like, our libraries are massive compared to, and they're getting bigger, you know, every year. And so, like, you know, you look at things like post, I don't know, pre the 60s or something like that, right? Before, like, rock and roll really took off and we had, like, bands that lasted 15 years and put out, you know, 22 albums.
Rock and roll?
I'm just saying, I'm using that as sort of a figurative starting point, you know, like, or I guess mid-50s, but I tend to think of bands from the 60s that had, like, longevity. But, yeah, I mean, I guess it goes back to the 50s and maybe the 40s, but, you know, you get prior to that and your musicians, if they had recordings, like, on 78s or something like that, you know, they were, like, a couple of songs. And, you know, they weren't very long because 78s couldn't really hold that much. And most of what you knew about musicians was through word of mouth, reputation, or maybe you happened to see them a few times, right? Then as we got in, and this is where technology again stepped in, you know, we got into more permanent recording media and things that could record longer and, you know, and higher fidelity and whatnot. And so now we've got these massive libraries by people and we've got these, you know, in comics we've got these stories that have been running for, you know, 30, 40 years, some of them, you know, like,
yeah.
And it's like, you know, we have people that, you know, you have your people that bitch about like continuity problems and continuity errors and how it's hard to keep up with continuity and stuff like that. And it's like, well, what do you expect? We never had a point in history where we've had characters that have lasted that long with that many new stories. With, you know, like,
yeah. Soap operas in comics, basically. Yeah.
Yeah. And well, I guess
I was just telling everybody, cause I've been watching those CW shows and those things are just as complicated the comics when I was growing up now.
Did you watch them all in like a binge?
I sort of, but the thing is, you get to one where they cross over, and you're like, this is just like what people complain about in comics. Because yeah. I don't know where to start. Like, which series am I supposed to watch first?
Yeah, that made more sense when they were airing, because you were forced to watch them in order, more or less.
Right. Well, and then you also have to catch up on all the other shows, right?
That's what I've been doing.
Oh, okay, so you haven't been watching them, like, watch one episode of one show, watch one episode of another. You've been watching, everything of one show and then everything of another show?
It didn't even occur to me to do it that way until Sean told me yesterday.
Yeah, well, with those CW shows, it makes a lot more sense because they are kind of... I mean, you can get away with Arrow for a while. But, but yeah, the other ones, they all kind of coexist in the same universe where, like, things in the world all still happen at the same time, whether or not you're directly aware of them. Like, so, yeah, that show, or those... That universe, it makes more sense to watch, like, you know, watch them each show episode in order, like, with each other kind of thing.
It's very confusing.
Yeah, when I was watching, you know, just when it was Flash and Arrow, and after the first one of those crossovers, I just decided, like, okay, if they're going to cross over, I'm just not going to watch that week. Because I wasn't huge on Arrow. I tried a couple episodes of it, and it was somewhere in, after a couple seasons, though, so maybe I, you know... It's the kind of thing where you really do need to kind of start from the start.
Yeah,
I think is another problem with it's a feature and also a bug of a lot of shows now is that you have to start from the beginning and it's intimidating if it's been around for more than a couple seasons.
But yeah. It's so much easier to do that now, you know, like
it is easier, yeah.
And they take that into account, and that's probably why they feel free to write that way, because you know, I binge on, like, old shows that were weekly episodic stuff that they never expected anybody to probably even rewatch them, much less watch them back-to-back. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you can tell where just, like, things kept getting reused, and they don't really, they don't have any kind of, like, linear sense to them, really, you know? Like, they were just, each week was a one-off thrown away, and then next week it was, like, you know, Groundhog Day, they'd start over, you know?
Yeah, I find shows like that are harder to binge generally. I mean, it's not always true, but just because they're kind of compartmentalized, you feel like you're getting the same beats over and over, you know?
Yes.
Yeah, they get really repetitive and they kind of get like fatiguing to watch a bunch of them in a row. You have to take a break and move on to something else and then maybe come back to it or something, but yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I was that way with Cheers for a while. Like, I would watch, you know, part of a season and then I'm like, okay, I need a break from this for a while. You know, I think if I watched an episode of Cheers per week, like, that would probably be great, you know?
Yeah, I recently...
It was intended to be watched.
And if you even go further back, because at least Cheers had... They were making some sort of attempt to kind of... I don't know, like, time-wise, one thing would follow another, you know?
Yeah, no, it definitely had some ongoing threads to some extent.
But you get further back, like, yeah. You know, I was watching My Favorite Martian, because I used to love that show when I was a kid, right? Because it was just a charming, goofy show. And I binge-watched a bunch of that, and I'm like, yeah, this doesn't work. This just doesn't work, like, back-to-back or anything, because you need a bit of breathing space in between them to kind of forget what was going on, I think. Otherwise, it just really gets super repetitive, and it's not as charming anymore. Like, you find yourself slogging through it.
They need to make playlists on these movie sites.
Like for
So you can just set in like all your weekly TV shows.
Oh yeah, like basically do your own channel programming.
Or something. Yeah.
Use your own channel programming, like and make your own. Yeah, that would actually be pretty cool.
Yeah, you've got your own. You got your own like independent network.
Yeah, essentially, and then you've got like a regular schedule, so you know what to watch and what not to watch. Well, I mean, I guess if you're putting it on, you want to watch all of it, right?
It would just rotate through like three or four shows.
Yeah. I wouldn't be surprised if you can do that on like Plex or something like that.
Probably. I mean, you can manually set up a playlist, I'm sure, but.
Yeah.
The other feature I always wanted is on Netflix, where it just randomly goes. I want a random feature, and it jumps you in randomly into the show.
Like watching TV, like flipping through channels or something.
Yeah.
I was thinking about something similar the other day. I've been on Amazon. I've just been like, sort of like going to the video store. If I see a cover that looks sort of interesting, I don't really read too close on the description. And I just add it and watch it, kind of thing. Because I'm trying to capture a little bit of that late night, like when you'd have like little independent channels back, you know, when I was a kid, and late night you tune in and they'd be showing something really bizarre you've never seen before from like a foreign country or something. Mm-hmm. And you wouldn't really know what it was because you didn't have a guide unless you had a TV guide handy or. You know?
Yeah. Like, so what's keeping you? That's how I do it.
Well, I'm,
what is stopping you?
No, I'm saying I've just more recently started doing that, where I'm just sort of picking stuff at random that I have no idea what it is, and just putting it on and watching it. Like,
oh, that's what I do. Yeah.
Well, I mean, you're still going for particular kinds of stuff though, because you're looking for that bad watchable thing that you like.
Yeah.
I'm just.
Can I ask, Mike? What was the start of that?
I wanted to watch Halloween movies at Halloween, so I decided I was going to only watch ones from the 80s, and that just turned into this.
Okay, because I remember you doing that. I just didn't know that was the origin. Okay.
Yeah, you've been at this for like over a year now, haven't you?
Well, it will be a year in October.
Huh. For some reason, I was thinking it was longer than that, like the year before or something. It seems so long. You've watched so many bad movies.
I have.
I'm just glad he watched some Neil Breen. That makes me happy.
Oh, man. The one, Double Down, is not good.
It's great!
No, it is hard to watch.
Oh, I love it so.
There's so much just stock footage.
Yeah.
Of him just talking about how great he is.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Dude is totally insane, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. I'm excited for his next one. He's got all that special effects in it.
Yeah, it looks crazy.
Oh, well, what's the next one?
Twisted Pair.
Twisted Pair, yeah.
Huh.
He plays twins.
Oh.
Twins. Oh, man. The makeup job.
The beard. He's wearing this the fakest looking beard you've ever seen in your life. It's amazing.
Huh. Well then. What do you know about that?
Yeah, I love me some bad cinema.
I mean, I do up to a point, but Mike's gone well past my threshold for stuff like that.
Mike went and found all these homemade movies.
Yeah, that's when I start seeing stuff like that.
Aren't they all homemade?
Aren't they all?
Huh?
Aren't they all homemade?
Well,
now these are like 90s, like digital video movies.
Yeah.
Like once it hits that point, I just can't process them. Like they're not enjoyable to me.
They weren't at first, but now I kind of prefer them over some of the other ones.
Because at least they have a certain charm to them.
Yeah, they can. Sometimes they're just like. Sometimes it's just like, Well, it gets into a literal home movie sort of thing, and it's like nobody likes watching home movies.
I like when they play the play button on it.
Yeah, that's only happened a couple of times, like once or twice.
When I get to that point, I'm just like, I don't find any enjoyment in them. But I guess it's like. Getting a taste for a certain food, if you do it enough, you sort of get used to it, right? Or maybe you're having sort of a movie version of Stockholm Syndrome or something.
I've said that before.
You now love your oppressors and your captors.
Yep. Basically.
I'm just more than a little worried for you, though.
No, you shouldn't be.
But you're mostly just drawing, right? It's in, on in the background.
Oh, yeah. I'm not sitting there in rapt.
This line of drool coming out of his mouth.
I would say that there's a good 20% of these movies that I've forgotten I've seen. You know?
Right.
It's just...
something, like, you'll hear something, you'll go, what the fuck, and then stop.
Yeah. That's exactly what it is.
I appreciate that you record little scenes and share them.
Oh, yeah,
that's Instagram.
That's when I do that, is when there's something that I can't believe I'm seeing, that's when I have to show the world. But you know what? What's happened is a lot of, like, the actors and the directors of those movies start following me on Twitter when I do that.
Uh-oh.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, I'm afraid to talk about these movies now.
Yeah, like, when I have that, you know, that I have this obsession kind of with Neil Breen, but it's like, I don't genuinely think he's good in any way.
Oh, no.
And, like, when I first started talking about him on Twitter, he was, like, liking my tweets. I'm like, oh, this is awkward.
Well, he doesn't get it, so it's not, I don't know if he would understand if you did just come right out and say, this guy is horrible.
Yeah.
I think he's kind of delusional.
Oh, he's got to be. I don't think they have, they used to have in Vegas, you know, he's a real estate agent.
Yeah.
In Vegas, and they used to have, or he used to advertise, like, on park benches and stuff. Mm-hmm. I wish I could find it. Like, I wish he was still doing that. I would, like, go look for it and get my picture there.
Yeah, I know, right?
Oh, just like my Mount Rushmore.
Just, like, sit on the bench with his head next to you?
Yeah, and then the other one will be sitting on his face. Yeah.
Yeah, wow. Well, more power to you guys. I mean, if you guys can dig this stuff, then at least you're getting some entertainment out of it, right?
Well, I don't think I can do a lot of the ones Mike does, though. Like, there's that middle ground between, like, so bad it's good and then just, like, bad.
There's no difference between a Breen film and the movies I'm watching, dude.
I don't know.
Maybe there's a...
You could be right, because I haven't watched a lot of those, so...
It could just be, like, a matter of flavor or something. It's like liking the Ramones, but not liking the Riverdales or something.
Project Declassified is... For one thing, it's more entertaining than a Breen movie. But
that's the thing. I don't want them to get boring. And Breen's movies do kind of get boring.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't finish his last one, because it's like... He should have titled the movie... I can't remember what it was called, but...
Was it Pass?
Yeah, it was Pastor.
Yeah, and he was Pastor.
That he should have called it, I Bought a Drone.
Yes. That's so funny, because they just did... Best of the Worst just did Pass Through, and that's literally what they said. They said,
yeah.
Should call this movie Neil Breen Bought a Drone.
Yeah, it's just all these drone shots in the desert. It's just like, oh my god. Like, it's the movie is shot by a drone and it's droning. That's great.
That's sort of metatextual.
Uh-huh.
Unintentional?
Very unintentional.
Yeah, I still stick to, like, the weird 80s Italian type bad movies.
Those are boring too, though.
Some of
Italian
them,
Spider-Man and stuff like that.
Some of them are really good, though, you know, which is weird. There's no way of telling ahead of time.
Which ones are good?
There was that one I told you about the Lady Barbarian a couple of weeks ago.
Hundra?
That actually turned out to be a pretty good movie.
I'm confusing it with Phoenix the Warrior. I still haven't seen Hundra.
No, I don't think Phoenix was very good.
Oh, go ahead.
Oh, and I watched another fun one the other day that was Outlaws of Gore. That's what it was called. Outlaw of Gore.
Yeah, Outlaw of Gore.
Which was a sequel to a movie just called Gore. But it had, you know, it had like Jack Palance in it and shit, which isn't a mark of, you know, high mark of quality necessarily, but...
That's a good movie, though.
But it's fun. I mean, it's a fun, you know...
Yeah, I want to see Gore, though, because... I've seen Outlaw of Gore many times because it was on Mystery Science Theater.
Oh, was it?
And they have flashbacks to the first one in that movie.
Right.
And I was like, I want to know what that first movie's about.
I'm going to bet the first one probably wasn't as fun as the second one, because the second one was somewhat comedic.
Yeah, it's silly.
And I think the first one was probably a little more straightforward. I haven't seen Gore either. I've only ever seen Outlaw. But yeah, that's what I'm saying. That holds up to me as an example of, this was a B-movie, you know, a foreign-made B-movie that was... just part of a big block of genre films, you know, but it actually turns out to be a halfway decent good movie. So
is this one of those where they dub everybody's voices?
There's American actors in it.
Yeah, you can tell the mouths are speaking English. I don't think there was a whole lot of ADR.
Okay.
I'm
always entertained by that.
The dwarf guy is dubbed.
Was he?
Yeah, because that's not his voice.
Oh, bummer.
I'm always kind of curious about, like, if that whole Italian cinema scene kind of, like, if that was built out of the spaghetti westerns that they would film out there. Like, if that kind of made, like, created all these jobs out there, and then they are like, well, we got to keep doing stuff, and we don't have lighters over here.
I imagine, because they would, you get these same sort of level of movies that were, there were a ton of westerns, there were a ton of sci-fi movies, like, post-Star Wars type sci-fi movies.
Uh-huh.
And then there were a bunch of, like, barbarian movies, And so it's like, yeah, they definitely worked in things that
like
they...
Like the same environments?
Yeah, and things that they thought were, like, money-making genres kind of thing, and churned out a bunch of stuff to make money off of them. And the quality is real hit or miss in a lot of this stuff. And most specifically, I'm speaking, the Italian, film of that era. Like, it's just, sometimes you'll get a real gem, and then sometimes you'll get a stinker. More often, probably, you get a stinker. And when I say stinker, mostly I just mean it's boring. The weirdest thing
that's the greatest sin a movie can make, is to be boring.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I mean, if it drudges along and you spend an hour and a half just waiting for it to be over, instead of doing the smart thing and turning it off, then, yeah, it's that's bad. The weirdest thing for me about Outlaw of Gore, though, was that all these costumes were supposed to be, futuristic, and a lot of them were supposed to be sexy, and none of them were. All of the costuming in this movie was terrible.
Futuristic?
Well, I guess, because they were supposed to be sort of a future-y society thingy, weren't they?
They were barbarians.
Right, but they were future Thundar.
None like of... post-apocalypse barbarians?
No. That would mean they'd have guns and stuff.
Yeah,
it?
I guess so. I mean, that was okay.
They were a lateral move. They were interdimensional barbarians with no... They were just like Conan.
Yeah, but they had magic gems and stuff.
Yeah, that's what barbarians have.
Okay.
Magic's okay. Magic's allowed.
So maybe I think that still adds to my argument, because that's part of the confusion. Some of the costumes looked like they were supposed to be future-y.
No, that woman looks like she's from the 80s, but that's because it was made in the 80s.
I mean, she's wearing that silver lamé kind of stuff.
Yeah.
A bunch, and gold lamé, and then there's that hunter dude who's all in chrome and whatnot, But anyway, I don't know. But the costuming was horrible because it all looked terrible. That was my point. None of it was flattering to anybody.
Seen any really good horror movies lately?
Mm,
no.
Good horror movies. Let me think.
I feel like they're hard to find.
No, I think there's lots of good horror movies out now.
Again,
I haven't watched them, but it seems like it. Everybody's talking about them.
Yeah, again, I haven't been watching a lot of current stuff.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I watched Hereditary, and it's enjoyable, but it's not, amazing or anything. It wasn't scary by any means. It was just a really good psychological thriller, that added some genre trappings. But...
Sorry, missed that?
It was pretty funny.
Oh, okay.
The ending was hilarious. It's so over the top.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Well, as soon as you see that old guy standing in the doorway with his dong hanging out, it's like, what?
Spoilers.
Oh, no, that was just in my showing. It was a guy standing at the exit.
He's like... Like when they do those special screenings of movies, they have the director doing a Q&A.
Draft
or something.
Houses.
Yeah. It's Austin, baby.
more like
draft house special menu for the night.
More like drafty, yeah. Drafty house.
Drafty house.
Yeah,
I like that one.
Shit. Yeah, I think the only really entertaining horror movie I've watched recently was an older. It's not too old, but it's an older movie called Piranha Sharks. From 2015, it's not terrible. It's not a terrible movie. It's a bad movie, but it's a funny movie.
Yeah, I'm gonna watch it. It's on my list.
Yeah, it's got something. You first start watching it, and you're like, oh, man, all right, I don't know. But then you keep watching it, and it's got something going for it.
That's more of the other movies that we've been talking about.
Well, he asked about horror movies. That's really the only entertaining horror movie I've seen recently. That's what I mean.
But I mean really good ones. Oh, like, not just entertaining, but like quality.
No.
Like it seems like it's just a lot of PG-13 stuff now and not jump scares and stuff. And,
Yeah. Unfortunately, no, I haven't.
I thought, The Ritual, is that what it's called?
Oh, yeah.
But that was pretty solid.
That's the one where they go into the woods, right?
Yeah.
Okay, I like that one.
That one was a Netflix original, I think?
Yeah.
Yeah, I still haven't seen that.
Yeah, I like that one. I saw The Descent recently, and that was pretty good.
Yeah, I can't believe you hadn't seen that yet.
Yeah. The worst scene of that was that when the woman starts getting anxiety in that little corner of the tunnel, and I had to pause it, and I was like walking around the house going, ah! Because that is something I would never, ever do.
You mean The Descent from, like, 03 or 04 or whatever that was?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Wow.
Yeah, I had seen, and liked his other, what was the other Neil Jordan movie? The War Dogs or what?
Dog Soldiers.
Dog Soldiers. I liked that one a lot. But I hadn't seen The Descent for some reason.
Huh.
Yeah.
They made a sequel to that.
Yeah, I heard it's not so great.
I don't really remember it, so I must not have thought too much about it.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of times with sequels, it's just like, well, especially in horror, it's like, well, we made a lot of money. We can make more money if we spend less on it, but we don't have a story. So either we try to recreate the same beats over, or we do something, or we evolve it to the next level. And neither of those like story ideas are really great, like as an abstract concept.
Wonder why somebody doesn't. I mean, I guess if you got an idea and you just run with it, then you're running with it, right? But you would think if something that's truly not good, somebody would speak up somewhere early on in the process and maybe. Because it seems like that, if you're going to change something, the easiest thing to change would be the story before you get started, right? Once you start shooting stuff, then you have to worry about trying to make the stuff you already spent money on work somehow.
Right.
But, if you caught the script early enough, couldn't you just make changes to that,
Movie's not done till the edit.
Right.
That's the final writing process.
And if that person can't make anything out of it, then it's too late, right? I mean, because what else are you going to do?
Yeah, no, that's all you've got is the footage that you got, yeah.
That's why you shoot coverage.
Coverage is great.
Did you see The Endless?
I don't think so.
Well, that's such a generic name. I might have. What was it about?
It's like two brothers. They were in a UFO cult when they were kids.
Oh, yeah, I did watch that. Yeah, I watched that recently.
I thought that was pretty decent. It's not, like, super scary or anything.
No. It had some interesting stuff, yeah. Yeah, I liked an earlier movie they did a little better. Now I can't think of the name of that movie. It was a vampire one?
The Cove?
It took place in Europe.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that I thought that was really interesting.
Yeah, that was
Spring?
That was a better one. But I was just thinking of some other
Spring.
Reason.
Yeah, Spring.
Yeah, that one I liked.
Spring. Yeah.
Huh.
I like what they're trying to do. They're at least having fun.
Yeah, and I like that they kind of bring their obvious, their relationship kind of plays off really well.
Oh, I remember an earlier movie they did called Resolution, too. It was a horror movie.
That they did?
Yeah, it was the Justin Benson and Aaron Moorhead.
Okay.
Yeah, it's on Amazon. You can rent it on Amazon anyway, so it's probably, you might be able to find it on Netflix or something too.
Well, I do the Google Rewards thing where like you just you answer little questionnaires and they give you money. And so I got $5.50 in there now, so I'll probably rent it on Google Play and watch it on YouTube.
Yeah, I remember liking that one. It was one of those ones that starts out being one thing and becomes another kind of movie.
Is that the one where they're in the cabin?
Yeah, the junkie.
Okay, I did see that.
Junkie lockup in the cabin and then shit gets
burned. Right, you're not sure if it's one thing or another, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I do remember seeing that. The one that keeps sticking with me that I saw last year was The Void.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that was a fun homage to like Carpenter and, you know, that was and Cthulhu, and that was kind of neat.
Yeah, a lot of people had really mixed feelings on that, especially as it got to the end. Like,
I still haven't seen it.
Yeah, it kind of went Event Horizon.
Well, yeah, exactly. It sort of starts off sort of slow and creepy, but slow. And then it winds up really fast and gets batshit crazy. Like,
yeah. I mean, the batshit crazy is fascinating, but it is kind of like a weird tonal mismatch. Like, it just kind of takes a weird turn.
Gets real like a... there's sort of a universe-crossing thing going on there, and it gets really fulchy during part of that.
And then the character that they introduce speaks in these very flowery sort of ways that just don't seem to fit the world that they're in.
There's a lot going on there that you can tell. I don't know, like, not that you can tell, but, like, it was played up really hard. Like the difference between theater acting and movie acting, almost, where it's just a lot more exaggerated, I think.
Right, yeah, it was theatrical, yeah.
But, I mean, I enjoyed it. I thought it was a good movie, especially for being a new movie, you know?
But yeah, yeah.
Anyway, yeah. I wonder if I have seen these. Sorry. I'm looking at things on Amazon, wondering if I've seen them or not.
Yeah, there was one that came out in 2015 called The Hallow. It takes place in Ireland. And it's like kind of creatures in the woods kind of thing. That was pretty good.
Hmm.
That one I saw, I think, on Amazon. Or may have been Netflix.
I wonder if I watched it. What's it called? The Hollow?
Yeah.
Like H-O-L? Or
H-A. H-A.
Oh, the Hallow.
Yeah. Like Hallow. Yeah, like All Hallows Eve. Yeah. I thought that was entertaining enough. Yeah, I don't know if it's just our generation or, you know, or what it is that it seems like, you know, horror movies just don't really satisfy for the most part. But I guess a lot of those 80 ones are really terrible in general. I've found rewatching them as an adult.
I'm trying to quantify what it is because I tend towards more of the feeling that I don't know why exactly, but you know, to me, a lot of the bad older movies are a lot more tolerable than the bad newer movies. And I don't know if that's just nostalgia or just because I've seen so much of them, like similar type things growing up, that that's my frame of reference for that. You know, like
I don't know. Have you seen The Incredible Bulk?
I have not.
Because that's an amazing movie.
Wasn't that a Mad Strip making fun of the Hulk?
Is that what it's called?
The Incredible Bulk.
Was that what it was? What was that?
It's The Amazing Bulk.
Oh, that's it. The Amazing Bulk.
Oh.
And
The Amazing Bulk. Oh, wow.
That movie is amazing, but I would not recommend anybody watch
it. I don't think I've laughed that hard.
It's pretty.
Don't get mad. Get purple.
Yeah. Not a single scene in that doesn't use green screen in some capacity.
I can tell just from the preview image on the trailer.
And for some reason, nobody walks like a normal person. It's all because they have the background move instead, like they're in a car or something. So people are walking in place instead of walking like normal people.
All the animals are CGI animals?
Yeah, like cartoonish CGI animals.
Awesome. I'll watch the trailer.
One of the funniest things I've ever seen.
So, would you recommend watching it?
Yeah.
Okay.
IMDb rating 1.7 out of 10.
That's one where I was making fun of it, and somebody who knows the director got on to me about it.
They chastised you for making fun of it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
I'm still gun shy from the whole Meepy incident a decade ago.
The what?
I was making fun of a band's cover of the Transformers theme song. Like, this is back in... This was like 13 years ago, I think. 12 or 13 years ago.
Yeah.
And the band somehow heard it. And so they wrote me. And they were really nice and made me feel terrible. And even sent me a CD and stuff. You know, like...
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, I felt terrible about it. So
long story short, your his favorite band now.
No, no. I mean, we haven't had any contact since, but yeah.
You're now the new guitar player for Meet Me.
They're in Australia, dude.
Don't you mean they're in Australia, mate?
You got it, dude. Yeah, that kind of taught me my lesson. I feel terrible, or felt terrible. So. Terrible.
Terrible. That's terrible.
Yeah.
See, that's what I would do to those Anons on 4chan if I knew who they were.
Make them feel terrible?
I'd make them feel terrible with kindness by saying, hey, I see that you said that that I can't get work at Marvel anymore because I did something worse than pedophilia.
Wow.
What they said.
Do they mention what exactly you did that was worse than pedophilia? Wait, are they implying that you did pedophilia as well?
No. So somebody was asking in a thread, like, they were talking about Gravity, and they're like, and somebody suggested, like, oh, you'll never see a McKeever character at Marvel again. And somebody's like, why is that? And this other guy says, well, he did some pretty shady shit, and they're not going to hire him anymore. Rich Johnston knows about it. He says it's worse than pedophilia, and I'm inclined to agree. So like, apparently, like, in 2012, there was this thing where Rich Johnston did a blind item. Like, he was trying to defend himself. He's like, well, I have a story about a Marvel executive who did something worse than such and such other person. And if I reported on it, it would, like, shut down Marvel. And the other so-and-so person was somebody who had, like, 45 counts of child porn or pedophilia or something like that. And so then it became, like, a meme on another website, the Outhousers, where they're like, you know, worse than pedophilia, worse than pedophilia. And they made, like, a worse than pedophilia generator, meme generator and stuff. And so I guess he was just making this Anon was making a reference to that meme. So that's, but at first I'm like, what the fuck? Like, where did that come from? And so, like, I'm actually trying to look where Rich Johnston wrote about me doing something worse than pedophilia, you know?
Wow.
I'm like, oh my God. But, yeah, 4chan. It's awesome.
If I could go back in time, I would laugh at myself forever being very optimistic about the internet making everybody better people.
You know? Yeah. Yeah, it really just brought the scum out.
Yeah, that dream crashed hard, man. The way people... Well, I mean, 4chan's been a fucking pit
since
inception, really. I mean, that's what... You know, that's how I kind of became known to anybody else is because of the way it was, right? You know?
Yeah, I used to go visit it on a regular basis, like, 15 years ago, just out of, like, fascinated... Like
shit's
you know,
giggles,
just
like,
fascinated with... Yeah, like, I'm like, what the fuck? Like, these people are really just, like... living in their heads too much and shit, yeah.
Except back then it seemed
like... it's just gotten worse.
Back then it just seemed like it was harmless kookiness, I guess. You know, I mean, it was terrible, but it was like... they're not doing anything to anybody. They're just talking
to
each other.
They weren't, like, organizing to... Yeah.
They were sort of a closed loop back then, I guess, you know?
Right.
But yeah, like... oh, terrible place, man. It always has been, so... it's no shocker, but... it fed on itself and became even worse somehow, I think, though.
Yeah. Yeah, it's on a steady diet of its own bullshit.
Yeah. They've Stockholmed themselves somehow, like, to where they actually love and believe everything they say. Cherish it as truth. I don't know. What is truth now? Sorry. Anyway.
It's what's for dinner.
Apparently, yeah. Okay, so I'm looking at a weird-ass... there's this movie called Food Fight that came out in 2013 and apparently stars Charlie the Tuna. But it's got Charlie Sheen and Hilary Duff and I don't know what this movie's supposed to be. Again, I was just looking up stuff on Amazon.
Is it an ad for Starkist?
It's a feature length movie. It says, the brief summary is, when the lights are turned off and the doors are locked, chaos reigns supreme for the products in this grocery store.
This really is just like an ad. It's got the Vlasic pickle guy. It's got the Twinkie the Kid, Aunt Jemima. That's a good idea.
It's like that video game movie that came out around the same time. Somebody saw that and was like, hey, I know, we'll just take all these mascots from products and do the same thing with it or something. I guess.
Is that McGruff the crime dog as well, I think, I see here?
It looks like him, right?
Why would he be in a grocery store?
Shopping? Fighting a crime?
Fighting crime, Mike. What else? I mean,
that's true. That was,
I think I got to see this now.
I mean, you know.
13% like this movie. I got to see this now.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, sure, it's just voice acting, but still, it's got some names in it and stuff, you know?
Yeah. So I don't know if you guys are aware of the comic book industry.
No, I'm not aware of the comic book industry at all.
Yeah. I don't know if you read comics, but are there any good comics you guys are reading now?
I'm sorry. That's a question I ask a lot, and because me and Mike don't read a lot of comics currently.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think Sean, you read a bunch, don't you?
I think I've been very surprised and enjoying the current Spider-Man.
Oh, the new run with Spencer and Walker?
Yeah.
It cool.
Scratches a weird itch that I didn't know I had.
Is it kind of retro, or?
Say that again?
Is it kind of retro?
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, they're doing some pretty weird, silly stuff. Like, I was telling them yesterday that Peter Parker and Spider-Man have been split. Like, there's a literal actual just Peter Parker and a Spider-Man.
Oh, like Banner and Hulk back in the day.
Yeah, but I don't know if there's anything under the suit. Like, they haven't really gotten into any of that yet.
Oh. Is Peter trying to figure out what to do with his day now?
Yeah, he's just having fun. He's, like, going bowling, and he's back with Mary Jane, and, Spider-Man just goes and does all the other bullshit.
Does he know he's Spider-Man?
Yeah.
Hmm.
But, interesting. And the Lizard is an actual professor again at a school as a monster.
Like, oh, cool.
Like that kind of shit. It's fun, and I don't know. I've been enjoying it.
Huh. Yeah, I'm like 6 months behind on my comics reading. Like, I need to get cracking the whip, picking that up. But I really like the Thor series.
Yeah.
Jason Aaron's pretty good at that epic stuff like that.
I remember reading it when he started it, the God Killer arc, I think.
Yeah, I actually didn't read any of his stuff with Thor as Thor or Odin's son. But I started with the second volume of the Jane Foster stuff.
Oh, great.
That's been really entertaining. Yeah.
I
think Aaron's probably my favorite comic writer right now, between that and Southern Bastards alone.
Yeah, Southern Bastards is hard not to like.
I still haven't read that, like any of it. And that's been going on for
long time. I think there's only 3 trades out right now.
Is it? Okay.
Yeah.
I keep intending to get caught up again, or to at least start reading stuff. It's like you were saying about Diving in the Arrow, there's so much stuff out there now, and there's a lot of stuff that's been going on for a little bit. I'm not sure where to start sometimes, I guess.
Yeah.
At least not on ongoing series. I mean, there's new stuff coming out that looks interesting that, you know, at least seems sort of self-contained that I really ought to pick up. I've been reading comics about comics lately.
Oh, yeah, like the Fred Van Lente one?
Well, I was reading the McLeod books, his books on comics.
Oh, yeah.
And then I was reading, I guess it's not, this is more of an instructional than a comic, but I started reading Eisner's books on comics.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I've got 2 of his.
Yeah, I'm just now into the second volume of his stuff. And then I got some other stuff that's like, I'm trying to line up to read. Like once I'm not, that kind of stuff doesn't interest me to read, or at least it hasn't in the past. If I'm going to read a comic, I'd just as soon read a fiction thing. But yeah. For some reason right now, it's been hitting the right chord, and I like it. I've been, I'm kind of impressed with these books, and I don't know, I feel like maybe it's sort of helping me think about comics better.
Yeah, I like reading like big interviews about craft with actually more with artists than with writers. Like I have a book, I think it's out of print now. What's the name of it? Panel Discussions. Mm-hmm. It was printed by one of the art schools, and it's got like interviews with Mike Mignola and Mike Waringo and Mark Schultz, and it's really, really good.
When was that out, or when did that come out?
A decade ago, maybe.
Looking it up.
That was from Tomorrow's Publishing, actually, now that I'm looking at it.
I think I...
So they may have put it back out in print.
I think I found it on Amazon. Maybe.
Yeah. Like a gold or brown looking book.
Okay, yeah, and it's got like a bunch of just little comic panels off to the side.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Okay, yeah, I think I found that on Amazon.
But yeah, I like reading that kind of stuff, and, you know, interviews with retailers and interviews with the, like when ICV2 does the big interviews with all the publishing heads every year, and they talk about the book market and the direct market and stuff. I just like to kind of stay abreast of all that.
Well,
but the craft stuff is the big thing for me.
Like, I mean, Tomorrow's they're a good publisher for that kind of stuff anyway. Like, I like their artist books. You know, I have a couple of them.
Yeah, I don't pick up every issue of their magazines, but like I'll skim the contents, and if there's something that grabs my eye, I'll pick up back issue or one of their artist magazines or whatever.
Yeah, and they had a couple of things I read several years ago that were interesting that weren't not just comics, but like talking about superhero TV and stuff like that.
Oh yeah,
and I'm trying to think of there was like a history of G.I. Joe, I think, was another one that I read. And it's, you know, but yeah, that seems to be their forte, is sort of somewhat educational books.
Yeah, taking deep dives into the craft and stuff and the history. I like that a lot.
I'm not sure where that actually falls in, like, category-wise, like what you call it. To me, it seems sort of like educational books, but it's nonfiction, you know, for sure.
Yeah.
But yeah, I have, like, their artist books, and then, like I said, those tellings about old toys, and they used to send books to me after we were on that, in that comic book podcast handbook thing, you know, a decade ago, they would send me stuff sometimes for review, and I'd try to review it, although I wasn't very good at reviewing it, because I'm not a very good reviewer. Reviewist?
Yeah, that's a very specific kind of skill.
Yeah, I mean, basically, my stuff boiled down to I just read it, kind of somewhat explain it, and say I liked it, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
I give it 2 crank thumbs up. Or something, I don't know. Yeah.
Something I got really good at that I really always sucked at and was very intimidated by when I worked at BioWare was giving peer reviews of their work.
Yeah.
Like I recently just talked to a comic artist who wants to try to branch out into writing and has a plot for a story, and like I gave him a bunch of notes and stuff, and then we talked on the phone, and it just felt really good to do that, and I felt comfortable and not confrontational and not I just get intimidated about being frank about stuff, but I found the right way to be frank about it, you know, so it's all about, like, you know, helping them and trying to improve it for them and not trying to go, well, in my opinion I would do this, because that's, you know, that's the wrong kind of note giving.
Oh, see, now that sounds a little easier. I thought you were talking about like when you have to talk to like a mutual boss about somebody else or something. Like,
or like a
panel.
A performance review kind of thing.
Yeah, but like telling what you think of somebody else kind of thing. Like, yeah, that's what I thought you were talking about. And that seems
terrible. I still hate when people ask me on Twitter or on a panel, like, if I've read this book and do I like it? It's like, Like, yeah, I want to say in public that I don't. I want to say in public that I don't read it because I think that writer's an asshole. Yeah.
Right.
That's a great idea.
And you can't just say, well, if I don't talk about it, I probably don't like it, because then it means anything you don't talk about, you don't like, right? And
right, that's kind of like the rumor game, right? Like, if you only deny rumors that aren't true, you know?
Yeah, so it's like, you're kind of, I don't like being put on a spot like that either.
Yeah.
Sometimes you get stuck.
People don't think about that, they just want to know, you know?
Yeah.
So I get it.
But that's actually, you know, that's a pretty good topic. How do you get out of situations like that when somebody puts you on the spot? Like, what's a good way to duck out without... ducking out, like without being so obvious about ducking out?
I just kind of say something like, oh, I haven't gotten around to that.
Yeah.
You know, and that's all you can do. Like, oh no, I've heard a lot of good things about it, or, you know, something like that. Like, I mean, I basically just lie if I've read something and didn't like it and they ask me, unless it's like one-on-one, you know, sitting at a signing or something. Like, I'd be happy to be more, like, I can express my opinion a little more freely then, but like in front of a big crowd of people and it's possibly going to get, you know, in an article somewhere on the internet or be recorded, like, no, I'm not going to engage in that. So either I'll say, oh yeah, that's one of my favorite books, or I'll say that's, you know, no, I haven't read it. Or, you know, I mean, I wouldn't mind saying like, yeah, I tried it, it wasn't for me, but it would depend on, you know, it would depend on actually probably the relationship I have with the talent, if any at all.
Yeah.
You know?
My general thing seems to be I try to pick out something that's good from a technical aspect about it, and then I say, but it's not really my thing.
Yeah.
Or something. You know, that way I'm not being like a dick about it or anything. Unless I just haven't read it, and I just say, I don't know anything about that one. Yeah.
Something I've done a couple times is I've taken a dump on stuff and then realized on Twitter, like on not on comics, but on movies or TV shows, and then realized I'm followed by somebody who works on it.
Making fun of me for just saying that?
Like the showrunner for Luke Cage follows me, and like I was kind of unflattering toward it. And then I'd forgotten he was following me.
I was like, oh shit.
Well, you can look it up on the internet. I'm not your personal Google.
Well, you've got three Alexas. Yeah, you are.
Sean McGoogle. We've run a pretty long time. I'm not sure how much time you got, Sean.
Oh my God! Yeah, we've run a long time.
And I didn't mean to let it go this long, but we were kind of just bullshitting. So
yeah. It felt good.
But yeah. I mean, it was good to have you back on again. And, you know.
Yeah.
Hopefully, it won't be 5 years again.
Yeah. And you can edit down all that talking that Mike did.
That would require me to actually, you know, edit the show anymore, which I.
It would take about 2 minutes out of the whole show.
Yeah, well, you know, you gotta trim off that fat, right?
It was great to talk to you, Mike.
Shut up.
Mike's so lovable.
I'm gonna call Mike on the phone soon, and he's gonna be forced to talk with me for a while.
You mean like right after we get off here?
No, not right after we get off here, but soon. We got talking to do.
Right on.
Okay.
It's been too long.
Are you gonna yell at me?
No, I mean we got like catching up, you know. Like catching up the stuff we can't say for everybody, you know. Okay, I want to talk shit about Crank. Okay.
Oh, well, okay. There's always that. Sure. I mean, but you know, pretty much Mike does that in front of me. So, I feel free to talk behind my back. I mean, just a quick thing. Anybody got anything in stores today? I mean, you still got Outpost 2 was last week, Sean.
Outpost 02 came out last week. Outpost 01 is still in stores. Go pick it up.
Did I hear Dove say something?
Go get Jay Torres and I's new Robots Volume 3.
Robots Volume 3?
Yep.
That's a surprise out of nowhere.
Might be the last Robots.
It seemed like just yesterday Volume 2 came out.
A year ago.
Wow. Well, congratulations. Yeah, Robots Volume 2 from Oni Press. Jay Torres,
three.
Sean Dove. Volume 3. Volume 3 from Oni Press. Well, go buy Volume 2, too, you dumbass. I'm not calling Sean a dumbass. I'm saying the dumbass that's not buying Volume 2 and just buying Volume 3. You know?
Well, it doesn't matter. You can just grab any one.
No, Sean, you want them to buy all of them.
No.
All of them.
All three will make a great Christmas gift for your children.
Yeah, see? That's a way to sell it. Right there.
Your children.
I don't know why I said children like Eddie Murphy does that one time in that one stand-up show.
No idea what you're talking about. I mean, but okay.
It was the 80s, Crank. You should remember.
Yeah, I remember those 80s things. There it is. Oni Press. Okay, and that's the only. Actually, it's the only book Oni put out this week. So.
Yeah. What a great headline.
What?
All right. Yeah, that's such a bullshit headline.
I don't know what you're... What?
That's what Bleeding Cool said.
Oh, sorry.
That was their headline introducing Robots was the only book out from Oni this week.
I was just saying it because I was looking to see if I had it because I do a lot of lettering. Never mind. Okay, whatever. Go buy Robots and Outpost 0. Number 2.
And is Lil Donnie out yet, or is that next week, or 2 weeks?
Next week.
Okay.
Lil Donnie. Oh, and you got a con this weekend or something, don't you, Mike?
Yeah, terrific con in Connecticut.
Connecticut, where you can connect with cuts. Never mind. Okay, so I guess that's it for this.
Now it's over.
Yeah. You can reach us at crankcast.com, crankcast@gmail.com. Mike's website is ihatemike.com. You can read Battlepug at battlepug.com. Sean McKeever is at seanmckeever.com, I think, isn't it?
Yep, and Sean K. McKeever on Twitter.
Sean K. McKeever on Twitter. Sean Dove is andthankyouforflying.com. And, yeah, so we'll see y'all next week. Have a good one. Goodbye.
No middle name, K. What the fuck?